Oblivious to the trauma taking place 2 miles away on the eastern side of the high ridge that bordered Black Rock Creek, Tom Talltree was awakened from a sound sleep by the sound of distant gunfire.
What is it, Tom?
Blue Woman had awakened and sat up to find her husband standing in the open door.
Gunfire. It's coming from Lohawk. Sounds like a war going on.
Blue Woman got up and went to see if Lily had also heard the noise. In a few seconds, she rushed to the door where Tom was still standing and listening.
She's gone. Lily's not there.
Blue Woman ran out onto the porch.
Lily! Lily! She's not there. You must go after her.
I'll try to find her in the morning when I can see her tracks. She could have gone anywhere. We might as well go back to bed.
You'll go back to bed. I'm going to look for her.
A horse.
Tom ran to the corner to get his shotgun. A moment later, Jimmy Redshirt rode into the yard. Relieved to recognize Jimmy, but still worried about the cause of his visit in the middle of the night, Tom propped his shotgun by the door and walked out to meet him. Standing in the middle of the front yard, Tom and Blue Woman listened, horrified by the boy's account of the blatant killings that had taken place in Lohawk. Jimmy's news confirmed Tom's dread feelings about the potential danger Lily's arrival had visited upon them.
Damn it! I knew it!
So absorbed were they in the tale of horror that none of the three noticed the shadowy figure slowly walking his horse up behind them.
I've come for Lily. Where is she?
She is not here! She has gone!
Don't lie to me, bitch! I'll cut your guts out! Where is she? Lily! Get out here!
Boot dismounted and started toward the door. Jimmy, seeing his chance for escape, turned his horse. As Jimmy fell, Boot went inside, Blue Woman following right behind him. He picked up the shotgun and removed the shells.
I told you she's not here. She's gone where you can't find her, so you might as well go away from here and forget about her.
Oh, woman, there ain't no place where I can't find her. You're starting to grind on my nerves. I just might send you to a place where nobody could find you.
Boot continued his search of the cabin. There was no one there.
Where is she?
She was here, but she left during the night while we was asleep. She can't be too far away.
Blue Woman's head jerked back, recoiling from her husband's betrayal of the girl.
I got a good mind to shoot you for the gutless son of a bitch you are. But I think the old woman's never gonna let you forget it, so I'd be letting you off too easy. We'll just sit back and wait for daylight. Hey, bitch, you can fix me something to eat while we wait.
I'm not cooking for the likes of you.
And I reckon I'll have to put a bullet hole in that hard head of yours.
His threat created no visible sign of fear.
All right. I'll shoot this worthless man of yours instead.
All right. But we ain't got much to fix.
Morning brought a light rain that ended an hour after sunrise. It brought a fresh breeze wafting across the east ridge that bordered the valley of Lohawk. It brought a parting of the dark clouds that had gathered over the settlement the night before. And it brought John Ward. Climbing up the east slope of the ridge, he rode easy in the saddle, letting Cousin pick his trail. Behind him, Two-Buck followed the buckskin's lead, pulling up beside him when he paused at the top to take a look over the valley beyond. From the ridge, it was possible to see Jonah Feather's store, as well as a couple of the closest houses. There were a few horses tied out front of the store, which struck John as odd for this time of day. For any time of day, for that matter.
Lohawk?
Lohawk.
John nudged Cousin forward, and the big gelding started down the west slope. Two-Buck followed obediently behind the deliberate lawman, although he wanted to charge down the slope and across the flat. Upon reaching the bottom of the slope, John eased the buckskin into a gentle lope, heading straight for Jonah's store. Flanking him, Two-Buck's eyes searched anxiously as if hoping to spot the fugitive. They pulled up before the store. Entering the building, they walked into the midst of a serious discussion among worried residents of the little community. So intense was the concern that no one noticed the two new arrivals until Jonah glanced up from his position at the counter.
John Ward!
Morning, Jonah. Gentlemen.
He was here, John. Boot Stoner. He was here. He came looking for old Walking Owl's daughter.
She passed through here, went to Black Rock Creek to find her aunt. He's killed a whole bunch of people.
John continued to listen as Jonah relayed the events of the previous night.
Where's the two men Wild Horse brought with him?
They said they was gonna try to pick a Boots trail where he left George's place.
Jonah then told John of the mission to Black Rock Creek that Jimmy Redshirt undertook.
And you say the boy never came back?
That's right.
Henry Redshirt stepped forward.
He never came home. I'm fixing to go look for him.
Black Rock Creek. I expect that's where we'll start looking.
We'll go with you.
It'd be best if you don't. I work better when I don't have to look out for anybody else. I've already got one hot-blooded Cherokee to worry about. I expect that's enough.
John, I ain't one to question you, but you might be underestimating the man you're fixing to tangle with. He's hell and damnation all by himself. If we'd been thinking smart, we should have sent to Fort Gibson for the soldiers to come get him. Maybe you ought to do that anyway.
Much obliged to you, gentlemen. But I expect we'll just keep the army out of this for the time being. Now, I'd appreciate it if you'll just see to the safety of your own homes and let me do the job I'm paid to do.
Outside, Two-Buck could not contain himself any longer. He was at John's elbow before they had time to mount.
He's right behind her. We've got to find her before he does.
We'll do what we can.
Over halfway between Lohawk and Black Rock Creek, John and Two-Buck met Tom Talltree, leading a horse with a body tied across the saddle. Recognizing the deputy marshal, Tom identified himself and explained that the body on the horse he was leading was young Jimmy Redshirt.
I'm taking him back to Henry.
Answering John Ward's questions, Tom repeated the details of Boot Stoner's visit to his home, just as he had told the Creek police.
How long ago did the policeman leave your place?
An hour, maybe an hour and a half.
How much farther is your place from here?
Half hour or so.
But Lily left your place sometime last night?
That's right. She left while we were asleep. Don't know exactly what time it was.
Now that devil's on her trail again.
Much obliged. We'll be on our way now.
The stop at Tom's house wasn't an extended one. Lily's aunt told them much the same story as they had heard from Tom. She did offer a good deal more about Lily's determination to escape from Boot Stoner, however. This information served to increase the flames of impatience galloping through Two-Buck's veins. Watching Two-Buck's reactions as the young man questioned Blue Woman in further detail about Lily, John made no comment. But it caused him to speculate on how he would feel if it was Lucy Summerlin on the run from some renegade like Boot Stoner. He knew that every hour that passed without catching up to Boot was an extension of the hell Two-Buck must be living through. Leaving Blue Woman, they led their horses along the creek bank to study the trail left in the sandy soil. Their purpose was to identify the different tracks so as to have some means of telling them apart. The rain that had fallen earlier that morning helped make the job easier, for there was no question the prints standing out the sharpest were left by the two creek lawmen. Other tracks were fainter, and in some places they had been washed out by the rain. Still, they were frequent enough to indicate the direction of travel. It didn't really require much of a tracker to follow the creek policeman's three horses, but John wanted to double-check the trail to make sure they were still on track. About a mile farther on, the trail left the creek bank and veered toward the west. There was no obvious reason for the abrupt change in direction that John could see. To him, it indicated a frightened girl with no idea where she was going. He stood on the creek bank for a long moment, looking in the direction in which the tracks led. If the trail continued along that line, it would lead them to Ocmulgee. Two-Buck was bending closely over the tracks along the bank.
Here!
John walked over to see what he'd found. Two-Buck pointed to a single moccasin print in the soft sand near the edge of the water.
It's her footprint!
It was the first real sign they had found that confirmed that Lily had come this way. The discovery only served to increase the anxiety already at a fever pitch in Two-Buck's mind.
Damn!
Well, looky here.
Boot Stoner looked along his back trail. From his position at the top of a tree-covered hill, he had a view of perhaps a quarter of a mile of the flat he had just crossed. He recognized the riders trailing him as the Creek Nation police who had tried to smoke him out of the barn. A grin slowly crept across his face as he peered back at the three horses, with two riders and one with a body draped across the saddle.
This is Captain Jack Wildhorse of the Creek Light Horse.
The sight now of the two remaining lawmen served to distract him from the growing frustration he had developed because of his failure to run Lily to ground. He had lost her trail somewhere at the foot of the hills and had turned back to try to find it again. Deep down, Boot welcomed the arrival of the two Indian policemen. Crowding his obsession for finding and punishing Lily was a feeling of invincibility that grew with every life he took. At the foot of the first hill, Thomas Bluekill reined his horse to a stop and waited for Willie Sharp to catch up to him.
He stopped here. See, his tracks go back and forth across this old game trail.
He followed the trail up this hill. We better keep a sharp eye. He might think about doubling back on us.
Maybe. But I think his mind is stuck on finding the girl. I don't believe he knows he's being followed.
Just the same, I think we better be careful.
The game trail they followed wound around the first hill, then crossed over a narrow ridge to the next hill. Approaching the top of the hill, Thomas Bluekill rounded a sharp turn to find himself suddenly confronted by Boot Stoner, standing boldly in the middle of the trail, his rifle aimed right at him. With little more time to react than his partner had, Willie released the reins of the captain's horse and wheeled his own mount, plunging down through the brush in an attempt to escape. Boot hurried down the path to stand over Thomas Bluekill. The policeman was dead. He then plunged into the brush after the second lawman. Willie Sharp was still alive when Boot found him.
You made a big mistake when you came after me.
A few miles behind Boot Stoner, at the foot of the hills, Two-Buck proved to be keener of eye than either the savage half-breed or the Creek policeman. The young Cherokee did not miss the faint toe print that barely disturbed the pine needles beside the game trail.
John Ward! She went that way!
John closely examined the faint marks in the needles beside the trail.
Could be a girl's footprint. All right, you stay on Lily's trail. I'm going after Stoner. We still don't know what those shots were about, and I'm afraid those two Creek policemen might be chasing him all over creation. I had hoped to catch up to Boot when he wasn't on the run.
You be careful, John Ward.
You be careful yourself. You don't know what that girl might be thinking right now. She might just take a shot at you.
John followed the narrow game trail up the second hill and suddenly stopped to listen. He quickly slid off his horse and knelt by the side of the path, his rifle ready to fire. Moving among the pines was a horse with no rider, but with a body tied across the saddle.
What the hell?
Then immediately he remembered the Jack Wildhorse had been killed.
That don't look too good.
To further concern him, another horse with an empty saddle pushed through a bramble of vines to join the first. A few dozen yards more, just past a sharp bend in the trail, he found Thomas Bluekill's body. Kneeling beside the corpse, he first looked all around him to make sure no one was taking a bead on him.
Damn. Sorry I ain't got time to give you a decent burial. Maybe I'll get back this way before too long, and I'll try to do for you then.
Lily made her way around the south end of the line of hills, keeping in the trees and trying to disguise her trail wherever possible. She made an effort to cover her tracks out of the general fear of being followed. Had she known that Boot had arrived at her uncle's house and that he had tracked her from there, she might have been even more frightened. She knew in her heart that Boot was going to show up sooner or later. She feared that she was doomed to live out her life as his chattel, and she knew that she could not go back to the existence she had had with him. Coming out of the trees at last, she found herself facing a seemingly endless prairie of rolling grassland with hills that were almost treeless. She hesitated as she looked out across the exposed expanse. A person walking there could be seen for miles. Feeling suddenly exhausted, she decided to rest there for a while in the shelter of the trees before starting out across the prairie.
Lily!
Lily raised the pistol.
Lily, it's Two-Buck!
Lily, insane with fear, staggered to her feet and tried to run again. Two-Buck caught her before she could take half a dozen steps.
Lily, it's me, Two-Buck!
Two-Buck! Two-Buck!
Then Lily went limp in his arms. Horrified, Tubuck held the unconscious girl, afraid at first that she was dead. With no idea what he should do, he held her close to him, rocking her back and forth as if she were a baby. Holding a finger on her neck, he felt a faint heartbeat. Filled with hope again, he gently laid her on the ground, then ran to his horse to fetch a canteen. Cradling her head in his lap, he sprinkled water on her forehead.
Oh, Tubuck, I thought you were dead. I saw Boot shoot you.
He don't kill me. I have to find you.
He picked her up and carried her to his horse.
Where are you taking me?
Back to your aunt. John Ward say take you back there, and he'll meet us there.
I can't go back there. Boot will look for me there. Besides, my uncle doesn't want me there. I heard him tell Blue Woman I bring trouble.
Boot already been there. Blue Woman don't want you to leave. No matter, anyway. You don't have to stay there if you don't want to. I'll take care of you.
Descending the last low slope before the open grass prairie, John Ward followed the single set of hoof prints along the game trail.
Damn!
Flat on his belly, John crawled up behind the fallen cousin. He raised his head just enough to watch the stand of oak trees. John peppered the bushes near the base of the trees. He heard Boot's horse gallop off. Still keeping a sharp eye in case Boot was trying to trick him into coming out in the open, he moved cautiously out from his fallen horse.
Best get started.
John spent a few moments trying to pull his saddle off of Cousin, but the stirrup was pinned under the big horse. So, taking cartridge belts and his canteen, he took one last look at his late partner.
I'm sorry, Cousin. I should have been on the lookout for some kind of trick from that devil.
Then he headed up the game trail, still cautious and alert for another ambush. He found the horses, all three of them, about a quarter of a mile from the hill where he had first seen them. They had wandered only until finding a stream and were grazing upon the young grass on the banks.
Easy. Easy now.
John took a quick look at the late Jack Wild Horse.
Damn shame. Jack was a good man.
With apologies to the late captain of the Creek Light Horse, he slid the body off the horse and pulled it over next to a dead log. Next, he pulled the saddles off the other two horses and lay them side by side over the body.
That's about the best I can do for the time being, Jack. Maybe that'll keep the buzzards off your face till I get back.
Nightfall found Tubuck and Lily fording Black Rock Creek, some 50 yards north of Tom Talltree's house.
What will they say when they see me? And my uncle is afraid I will bring Boot Stoner down on him again. He does not want me here.
Blue Woman wants you to come back. Besides, John Ward said to bring you back here.
When they pulled up in front of the small cabin, the door opened and Tom stepped out on the porch, his shotgun in hand.
It's me and Lily.
Properly contrite over his earlier treatment of his late brother's only child, Tom Talltree reached up to help Lily dismount. As soon as her feet were on the ground, her aunt ran to embrace her.
Oh, you had us worried sick, child. You shouldn't have run away like that. I guess it's a good thing you did, though, because Boot Stoner was here. Well, never mind about that. He's gone now, and the main thing is you're safe. We'll be ready if he ever shows up here again.
Tom stood with Tubuck, watching the two women walk to the cabin.
Where's John Ward? Did he catch that murderer?
Tubuck explained that he and John had parted when he picked up Lily's trail.
He went after Boot. Told me he'd meet me here back at your place.
You can put your horse in with mine. And then we'll see if we can find you something to eat.
After a quick meal, the group had gone to bed. Tubuck having slept out in the barn. The first to awaken the next morning was Blue Woman. As the room grew bright from the lamplight, she slowly came out of her slumber. With eyes blinking to adjust to the brightness, she sat up, looking around her, confused by the light. Her gaze finally focused upon the grinning half-breed, sitting, watching her from a chair propped against the doorway.
Tom, wake up.
Damn, if you ain't a hell of a sight in the morning.
Lily sprang up with the report of the rifle.
I've come for you, darling.
Did you miss me?
Two-Buck burst into the room, charging past Boot, who was hidden behind the door. The obvious anguish registering on Blue Woman's face told Two-Buck that something was terribly wrong. He spun around just in time to catch Boot's rifle barrel squarely across the bridge of his nose.
Two-Buck!
Forgetting fear for herself, she ran to his side.
Well, now, ain't that something? So that's the way things are they? That makes things a little different.
He glanced in Blue Woman's direction.
Stop that bawling and get me some rope, woman.
Blue Woman looked up at Boot with eyes filled with tears, the lines in her face etched deeper by the anguish of this horrible moment. Her eyes narrowed as she focused on the hateful, smirking face.
You go to hell!
I reckon you'll get there before I do. Well now, that just leaves the three of us for this little party. You better find me something to tie him up with, else I'll just have to shoot him right now. Two-Buck, that's what you called him? I thought he was the one I killed back when that damn lawman jumped us after we left Jackrabbit Creek. He was chasing me because he's sweet on you, ain't that right? I bet he'd like to know your body like I do. And I mean every inch of it.
Get me that damn rope, or by God, I'll cut him like a fish.
I don't know where any rope is. Maybe in the barn.
No, you don't think I'm gonna let you go out to the barn while I sit here watching your boyfriend, do you? I thought he might enjoy watching me and you have a little party, but he ain't worth having to keep an eye on. It'd be a lot easier to go ahead and kill him.
Wait!
Lily pointed toward the kitchen. There on the back of one of the chairs was a coil of rope that Tom had intended to take back to the barn. She scrambled up to retrieve it. Still too groggy to put up much resistance, Two-Buck was effectively trussed up, then dragged over to sit up against the wall. Out of his stupor, he looked with alarm at Lily, crouched trembling in the corner near him. Then he glared at Boot.
You jumped me. But John Ward, not so easy to trick.
Is that so? Well, you know where your Mr. John Ward is right now? He's on foot way back in the hills. I shot his damn horse out from under him. I expect it'll take him till, sometime about noon tomorrow to get back here. Shoot. By that time, me and your little sweetheart here will be long gone. And the worms will be making a meal off of your carcass.
Cut me loose and fight me like a man. Then we see who the worms eat.
Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I'll just untie one arm and one leg. Let you hop around like a rooster while I carve you up with my knife.
Propping his rifle against the wall, he walked over and grabbed Lily by the wrist.
No!
She tried to resist, fighting against him as he dragged her over to the bed. Dropping his trousers, he forced the sobbing girl's legs apart, all the while grinning at Two-Buck. Unable to bear the sight, Two-Buck closed his eyes tightly.
No, you can't stand to watch. But you can still hear.
I am surprised to see how small you are. You talk like a big man, but you are very small where you have to make children.
What the hell are you talking about?
You don't have much to make babies with. You look like a small boy.
You talk big for a dead man.
Boot jerked up his trousers and walked over to Two-Buck.
Lily! Get up from there! We're leaving.
I'll go with you. But please, please don't kill him. It's me you want. Leave him in peace.
Well, that was just what I was planning to do. Since you think so much of him, I decided not to shoot him. Is that what you want?
She did not know how to respond, unable to believe that Boot would actually show compassion just to please her. But he checked to make sure the Two-Buck's bonds were secure, then promptly turned away. Grabbing Lily by the arm, he led her outside. Pulling her back to the horses, he helped her up. Then, as he had done on the day he abducted her from his father's house, he tied her wrists to the saddle horn. As an added precaution, he looped a rope under the horse's belly and tied her ankles to the stirrups.
I wouldn't want you to fall off, darling.
Then Boot walked over to the corner of the porch and found an unlit lantern. Lighting it, he tossed it into the small cabin.
Damn! I'd like to stay and watch you cook, but this place is gonna be too hot in a few minutes.
Tubuk closed his eyes, mouthing a silent prayer to his gods. When he opened his eyes, there appeared to be a form before him, its outline wavering in the hazy, smoke-filled room. Casting burning chairs and small furniture aside, defying the greedy monster to impede him, John Ward walked through the flaming room. With no time for untying him, he reached down, grabbed Tubuk, and hoisted him on his shoulder. John retraced his steps to the door and the cool, fresh air outside. Without pausing, John carried Tubuk down to the creek and laid him in the shallow water while he cut the ropes that bound him.
You gonna make it?
I think so. But I wouldn't have if you'd been a minute later. I thought I was done for. How did you know I was in there?
I got here too late to catch Boot. The house was burning like hell. No one was outside. I didn't figure Boot took everyone with him, so I went in to check it out.
Lily! He's got Lily again!
And I figured... What about the folks that lived here? Where are they?
Dead. He shot them both.
How long has he been gone from here?
I don't know for sure. My mind was on other things.
John got to his feet. He glanced back at the burning cabin, and then he looked up at the sky. Already, the moon had disappeared behind the hills, and the darkness of the sky was softening. Daylight was not far away.
I'm wasting time standing here, John.
I'm ready to ride.
Well, hell, you're soaking wet. Maybe you ought to go stand close to the fire.
I ain't going close to that fire no more. My clothes will dry out before long.
Suit yourself. Let's get ready to ride.
It was still early when Boot rode into the little community of Lohawk. With no concern at all for the risk of encountering vengeful residents of the town, he rode up to the store, leading Lily's horse with Tubuk behind hers. He tied his horse up at the hitching rail, pulled his rifle out of the saddle sling, and took a long look around before entering the store. Jonah Feathers almost tipped his chair over backward when he saw who his first customer was.
Don't shit your britches. I ain't gonna kill you if you do like I tell you. Where's your woman?
In the house.
Call her in here.
Ruth, get in here.
Ruth Feathers came through the doorway from the attached living quarters.
What is it, Jonah? I'm trying to roll out some
She saw Boot standing there with his rifle cradled across his arms.
What are you doing here, you murderer?
You better tell her to shut up.
Ruth, for the love of God, hold your tongue.
Boot informed Jonah that he was there to get supplies. He walked around the little store, pointing out items he saw on the shelves and calling out the quantities he needed of each. Jonah hustled back and forth to fetch the items indicated and placed them in a stack on the counter. Ruth backed away behind the end of the counter where she stood silently watching. When she was sure Boot's attention was on something on one of the shelves, she reached under the counter to retrieve the butcher knife used to cut side meat. She slipped it into the deep pocket of her skirt. She was not certain what she would do with it, but she was determined to have some form of protection.
All right, load that stuff up on them horses outside.
When Jonah jumped to comply, Boot motioned him back with his rifle.
Not you. Let her load it up.
Ruth's eyes narrowed again, her lips pressed tightly together.
Do as he says, Ruth. It ain't worth getting shot over.
Yeah, Ruth. It ain't worth getting shot over.
Ruth picked up two sacks of supplies. She was startled to see Lily sitting on one of the horses, her hands and feet tied to the saddle.
Oh, dear Lord, child. That savage found you.
I'm so sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry I brought all this trouble down on you.
It's not your fault, child. I'll try to cut you loose, and then you run.
Don't make him mad, ma'am. He'll hurt you.
Never you mind that.
Ruth began sawing the rope that held Lily's foot to the stirrup.
Hey, I didn't tell you to do no talking. Get back in here and get the rest of my goods.
Shielding her knife with her back turned to him, she quickly hid it in her skirt again. Turning around, she marched back inside to get the other sacks. After bringing the sacks outside and securing them to Boot's horse, Ruth stepped over to stand by Lily's horse when Boot stepped off the porch and prepared to mount.
I don't suppose you'd consider paying for those goods.
Hell, I am paying you for them goods. I'm letting you and that old crow you're married to live. I might could even do you a bigger favor and shoot your old lady. How'd that be?
No, no! You take the merchandise.
Bootstoner! You're under arrest for murder! I'm giving you a chance to surrender peacefully.
Boot's reaction was immediate, but it was not to surrender. Swinging his leg over, he kicked his horse hard, and the animal bolted away with Boot lying low on its neck. Thinking quickly, Ruth severed the lead rope when Boot's sudden departure pulled the line taut, causing Lily's horse to bolt after Boot's before veering to the side and galloping off in another direction. John Ward and Two-Buck galloped up to the store.
Go after her! Lily!
Two-Buck rode after Lily.
Yeah!
At long last, the duel was on. Weeks of frustrating search had finally boiled down to a deadly dash across a grass-covered sea of prairie. This time, John felt certain, win or lose, the issue would be settled. John rounded the bend in the road in time to see Boot ride into the barn, coming out of the saddle before the horse came to a full stop. John pulled up hard on the gray's reins. John quickly looked around him for some position of cover. Not a moment too soon, he dived behind a large oak about 30 yards from the front of the barn. Rolling back to the other side, John rose up on one knee. As soon as the last shot rang out, he sprinted for the open barn door. By the time Boot moved to the loft's loading door to spot the lawman, John had reached the cover of the barn below him. Frustrated, Boot shot blindly through the loft floor. John rolled under Boot's horse. John hustled to the side wall and the ladder to the loft. Climbing quickly up the steps with his rifle in one hand, John reached the loft floor just as Boot turned to discover him. Finding himself dead in the lawman's sights, Boot jumped from the loft door to the ground below. John scrambled up onto the floor of the loft and moved to the door, expecting to see Boot running for cover. Instead, Boot was trying to drag himself back inside the barn, his leg having been broken in his jump from the hayloft. Not willing to risk the same fate, John moved quickly back to the ladder and descended the plank steps two at a time. He landed on the floor of the barn at nearly the same time Boot struggled inside the door. Boot reached back to pull his rifle to him. The bullet shattered Boot's arm. He looked back at John Ward, the deputy standing with his rifle aimed right at him, and realized he was done for.
Don't shoot! I give up! You got me. My leg's broke. I think you broke my arm, too. I give up. You're a federal marshal. You can't shoot me in cold blood.
John's sense of honor won out in the end, and he slowly lowered the rifle and approached the crippled outlaw.
You're gonna have to help me up. My leg's broken. I can't put no weight on this arm.
John hesitated for a moment, studying the man who had terrified such a large part of the nations for weeks.
All right.
He bent down to give him a hand. The two adversaries looked each other in the eye at that moment. Boot's eyelids narrowed, and his eyes quivered slightly as he suddenly lunged up with his long skinning knife, thrusting up at John's belly. Just as suddenly, Boot's wrist met and locked in the steel grip of John Ward's hand. At the same time, he jammed his rifle barrel up under Boot's chin.
I was hoping you'd try that. No!
It was a long ride back to Fort Smith. A long way to carry a worthless corpse. It gave a man a lot of time to think. It had taken some time to finally track down Boot Stoner, but once again, John Ward had gotten the job done. Thankfully, there weren't many as bad as Boot Stoner, but one's bad enough. He thought of the evil that the savage half-breed had wrought, the lives he had taken, and those he had altered. There was some good that had come of it. Lily had gone back to the Cherokee Nation with Two-Buck. She hadn't agreed to marry the young man who worshipped her, but John supposed she eventually would. Thoughts of the young couple finding happiness in a world of misery triggered other thoughts. And for the first time he could remember, John Ward was lonely. As he made his way across the Canadian River north of the Sandboys Mountains, He wondered if it had been him lying across the saddle of a horse instead of Boot, would there have been anyone to grieve? What the hell would it matter? But he knew what was really bothering him. Lucy Summerlin. Thoughts of the doctor's daughter had penetrated his concentration on too many occasions during the past few weeks, far too many to ignore. In his line of work, thoughts of a woman could influence a man's decisions.
Maybe I'm in the wrong business.
After dropping off Boot's body, John went to speak to Judge Parker in his office.
I am glad to see you back safely, John. I know this was a tough one.
I'm sorry it took so long. A lot of people got killed.
Seems to me, couldn't have been helped. The main thing is that he's no longer a threat. I guess you'll be wanting to get back to that time off I interrupted before. Maybe do some hunting and fishing?
There's some other things I need to take care of.
Well, you certainly earned it. Enjoy yourself.
Thank you, sir.
Dr. Summerlin was sitting on the front porch of his clinic holding a coffee cup in his hand as John Ward rode up.
Well, John Ward, did you ever catch that outlaw you were chasing?
Yes, sir. I caught him.
How about my gunshot patient? What was his name?
Two Buck.
Right, Two Buck. How's he doing?
He's getting along fine. I think he's going to get himself married.
Well, come on in and sit down. There's still some coffee left in the pot.
No thanks. I was hoping to talk to Lucy.
John, Lucy's not here.
What?
She's gone back to St. Louis to stay with my sister. A place like Red Bow is kind of hard on a young woman. I think she stayed with me a lot longer than she wanted to.
John was devastated. It had taken so long to bring himself to the point where he knew what he wanted. And to find out now that he had missed his opportunity was almost too much to bear. She had waited for him to commit to her. He was sure of that now, and because of his lack of confidence, he had lost her.
Damn, I'm sorry, John. She just left yesterday. One of my patients took her over to Deer Creek, and she's going to catch the train there tomorrow morning.
Deer Creek? She's catching the train in the morning?
That's right.
Deer Creek's a day and a half ride from here. Or half a day and a night.
Riding straight through the night, stopping only periodically to rest his horse, John sighted the small gathering of homes and stores that made up the settlement of Deer Creek close to mid-morning. Already worried that he was not going to make it before the train arrived, he was at once dismayed to see the train not only there, but already pulling out.
No! Damn it! No, by God! Yeah!
The horse galloped out beside the track, racing the gradually accelerating locomotive. Pulling even with the engineer's cab, he grabbed the handrail and swung himself aboard.
Stop the train!
When the engineer did not respond at once, John pulled his badge out of his pocket and shoved it in the poor man's face.
Stop this damn train! I'm a deputy federal marshal and I'm arresting a criminal on this train.
Left with no choice other than to comply, the engineer brought the train to a stop. John ran into the passenger car. Charging into the second car, he saw her at once. Stunned, her eyes wide as saucers, Lucy Summerlin could scarcely believe what she saw.
John!
Lucy, your pa told me you were going to St. Louis, and I reckon that's what you ought to do if that's what you want. But I couldn't let you go without telling you, I want to marry you. If you think you could tolerate me, I'd be obliged if you'd be my wife.
John Ward, that is about the worst proposal of marriage I've ever heard.
Oh, well, what do you say?
Well, I don't know. Do you love me?
What? I don't know. I mean, I reckon.
Which is it? You don't know or you reckon?
Hell, of course I love you. I love you bad.
All right, then. I'll marry you.
Lucy smiled as she acknowledged the good wishes of the other passengers. There was nothing she desired in St. Louis. Everything she needed was right there in the nations.
We'll be right back.
Duel at Lohawk is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2007, Charles West. Recorded by arrangement with Now Signet, a member of Penguin Group USA, Incorporated. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, James Keegan, Richard Rowan, Patrick Bussink, Ren Casey, Eva Wilhelm, Gregory Gordon, Gary Tells, Michael John Casey, Bradley Smith, Tim Carlin, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Alyssa Wilmoth, Nanette Savard, Jeff Allen, Casey Platt, Katie Karkov, Christopher Graybill, Christopher Sheeran, Elizabeth Jernigan, Daniel Sontag, and David Coyne. Directed by Richard Rowan. Dialogue editing by Patrick Stratton. Graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry and Patrick Stratton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Duel at Lohawk, be sure to look for the Trail of the Gunfighter and Dead or Alive series. Available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Graphic Audio presents Cotton Pickens.
You calling me a cheat?
Well, friend, the way you're dealing off the bottom with them pasteboards, it sure looks like it to me.
Why, you horse's ass!
You there, man who called himself Cotton. We know you're down there in that holler. Ain't nobody gonna hurt you. We got a proposition for you. That's all. That there was Jack Nolan you killed back yonder in the saloon. The other one was his partner, the fat one named Larson. Both of them was gunslingers. You plenty fast, Mr. Cotton. Might be the man we want. You want a job?
I was still sort of not believing it when they handed me the badge. Sheriff of Puma County, Wyoming Territory. Notice, these rules go into effect right now. No shooting off guns in the town of Doubtful. No galloping horses in town. No horse racing in town. Now, I wouldn't hold it again none of you if you's all to quit, boys. You ain't getting paid enough to put your butts on the line. Way I see it, we're soon gonna have more than 50 gunfighters in this valley. I aim to either stop this building up war in the valley or stand right in the middle of it shooting. You boys planning on starting a war all by yourselves?
Law won't do nothing. So I guess that leaves it up to us, right, Sheriff?
What you all have to do is get organized. Get together. Little ranchers, farmers, sheepmen, you all gotta start pulling in double harness. You gotta start being real careful not to let none of these high-paid gun slicks pull you into trying to match them on the draw. I done all that a man could do, Preacher. But I'll add this. You're fixing to get a lot of good men killed in this valley if you don't back off this stupid plan of yours and break up this so-called army.
Nonsense! I shall lead my Christian army into the Valley of Death, and we shall emerge victorious, waving the banner of Christ!
Cotton!
Jack? What's on your mind?
Killing you!
You're crazy, Jack! Plum loco! We're brothers!
Don't make no difference!
You're lying, Jack. Who hired you to gun me?
Nobody, Cotton. And I'm telling you the truth. It's a business, Cotton. That's all it is. I'd kill Pa if he was around and got in my way.
Jack, don't draw on me. I'm better than you are, Jack.
No way, kid. See you in hell.
Cotton Pickens, Graphic Audio's newest Western hero. takes to the saddle in Cotton Pickens 1, Blood Valley.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.